Someday we'll go places, new lands and new faces, the day we quit punching the clock. The future looks pleasant, put in prison, let's take a walk around the block.
I'm Peter Solomon, you're listening to Jazz 88, and this morning I have the pleasure of speaking with renowned singer Jane Monheit. She's playing a show at the Dakota on Tuesday, July 30th at 7 p.m. Jane, welcome. It's so nice to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I know you grew up on Long Island. Can you talk about your early musical life and how you found jazz vocals as your chosen profession?
Well, you know, it really all came from my family. My family is very, very musical, and I grew up with a lot of different genres of music around me, but the most powerful influences were jazz, musical theater, and bluegrass. Those were like my big three. And really grew up immersed deeply in all three, but jazz was kind of always number one. Like, I kind of really always knew I was going to go down that road. And then when I decided to go to college, you know, I decided to study jazz, and that was really the point where I shifted into, you know, this is it, this is the sole focus, this is what I'm doing.
Honeysuckle Grove, oh, 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 sick, yeah, every honeybee fills with jealousy, wound that she out with me. I don't blame them, goodness knows. Honeysuckle Grove.
I've read that Ella Fitzgerald was one of your original inspirations. Can you talk about some of the artists that, like, really inspired you as a singer?
Oh, man, Ella is my queen of my world, you know, and because of everything about the way she sang and everything about the person she was, you know. But there's so many more, too. Sarah Vaughan, Carmen McRae is a huge influence. A lot of the great male singers, Sinatra, Joe Williams is a big influence, you know. And then some of the singers that are outside of jazz from the other genres that I mentioned earlier. Bernadette Peters is a massive influence. Bonnie Raitt, huge influence. Maura O'Connell, a beautiful Irish folk singer, is one of my main influences when it comes to that kind of music. So it really is a far spread thing.
I also read that in 1998, this is obviously moving far ahead, you participated in the Thelonious Monk competition and you ended up getting runner-up. I forget the name of the woman that won, but she was a veteran musician in her 60s. But you were in this competition with some, like, really amazing singers like Tierney Sutton and Roberta Gamberini. Terry Thornton was the name of the woman that won. Can you talk about that experience and what was that like?
Oh, it was incredible. And the competition still exists. It's now called the Hancock Institute, after Herbie Hancock. They changed the name, but it's the organization still exists, and I'm still involved with them. But it was a very intense experience for me at 20 years old to go into that situation, bring my own charts, play with these jazz greats in the trio, you know, in front of these judges. I mean, the judges were Joe Williams, Diane Reeves, Dee Dee Bridgewater, Nina Freelon, and Diana Krall. I mean, Joe Williams. I had to sing in front of Joe Williams, you know what I mean? Like, and all of those incredible women. So, you know, it was very scary for me at 20 years old. Like, you know, my boyfriend came with me for moral support, who is, you know, of course, now my husband of many, many, many years. It was quite an experience, but it was all very positive. I met my first manager, my first record label there. So the whole thing really did start my career, and yeah, quite an experience.
So before I was talking to you, I was listening to a podcast, and Doris Starr Tucker, who's now, you know, enjoying some success as a recording artist, but she was talking about how much she learned from listening to you, and she featured you in this podcast, and it was really interesting because she asked you a lot of questions about something that I honestly had not even thought about what it was like and the pressures on you as a young female singer to kind of conform to the expectations that everybody had for you back in 2000, 2002. How much has that changed? And can you talk about how you're different where you are now versus then?
Oh, it's changed in a, I mean, it's the opposite now. It's completely different. Well, it was also the time. You know, if you really look at the 2000s, like the first decade, it was really a time where being emaciated was in. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't just that thin was in. Like, it was like you had to be bones. You know, and you remember the way, you know, all of our celebrities were getting made fun of all the time the second they gained a pound. They were getting weighed on television. It was like all kinds of things were happening. So all the people around me were like, oh my God, you have to lose weight or else you'll never be a success. And I was like, I don't think that's true. You know what I mean? I was like, I really don't. I did give in to the pressure so many different times in my life. I think all of us have at some point, you know, when we sort of do what everyone wants from us. And but it's you got to, you know, rail against it and stand up for your music and who you are, you know, and your health. I mean, my health became the most important thing, not being skinny for managers and record companies, you know. So I'm on the other side of it, and that's wonderful. And now at my current age, 46, no one would dare talk to me that way, you know, and like, and I love that. I love being in that position where like everyone, you know, no one would dare. You know, I'm healthy now, and that's really good. And I wish that for all the young women in this industry, but it's definitely a better climate now.
Does the way you make a record still reflect the same method that you used earlier in your career, or has that changed a great deal? I mean, obviously during COVID, things were done a little bit differently, but are you making a record still in a live situation, or what sort of...
Yeah, always, 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 because that's tradition in jazz. If we need to, we'll overdub certain parts. Like, for instance, my last, you know, few albums, there were strings overdubbed. The strings were recorded in Nashville, where my record label is located, you know. But everything you hear that's the rhythm section and me, we record in the same room. I mean, we're obviously in booths, so we can, you know, make edits and adjustments, but we are all in the studio together recording live. And I insist on doing that. I make my records the same way Joel Dorn taught me to make them, you know, 25 years ago. He taught me everything I know. And every time I go into the studio, I go in like I'm his kid. You know what I mean? Just like I, you know, because he was like another dad to me, you know? So it's just, I go in there like, all right, this is everything I know. I learned from Joel. This is what we're doing.
You just mentioned a name that I have great affection for. I talked to him a couple of times about Roland Kirk, you know, because he's such a brilliant and interesting an idiosyncratic producer. Like, you know, he worked with all those guys in Atlantic Records, Yusuf Lateef and Les McCann and Eddie Harris and, oh yeah. My God. And then you were, I read a quote from you about Joel Dorn that he would sometimes lie to you and tell you that he wasn't going to record something, and then you would sing something, and then he would have it on tape. And like, can you talk about some of the other lessons you might have learned from working with him? Or?
And I fell for that every single time, too. He did it to me a lot of times. And I fell for it every time. My recording of Over the Rainbow was a rehearsal.
Somewhere over the rainbow.
It wasn't even a first take, it was a rehearsal. Yeah, Joel, you know, he taught me to keep it simple. He taught me to, you know, really focus on what was important. You know, having a really great solid trio that was really, really swinging, focusing on the lyrics, you know, singing from the heart, not doing too many takes. Yeah, we kept it very, very simple in the studio. You know, we didn't do a lot of editing or anything like that. We just played the tunes, you know, and we captured something real. And I really appreciated that.
Gangway will begin when our ship comes in. To Venice and playtime to Paris.
Is there anything else that you want to mention in advance of your appearance at the Dakota?
Just that, you know, my website is Jane Monheit Online, and all my tour dates are always there. So, you know, if anybody's looking for me, that's where to find me. There or Instagram.
And what is the name of the forthcoming recording?
It is my first self-titled album. I'm very excited about this. It's my 13th record, and it's just going to be titled Jane Monheit.
And the label again?
Club 44 Records. I love these guys. They're the best.
All right, Jane Monheit, it is a pleasure to talk to you. And I would love to come out to the Dakota, but I have to be up at 4 a.m. So it's...
Oh, my goodness. Of course don't come.
But everybody else should come. Yeah.
I feel like it is past your bedtime, sir.
Yeah, unfortunately. But I would love to hear you sometime. And in the meantime, I'm looking forward to the new album. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you. Have a good rest of your day.
You too. Take care.
St. Thomas, and then in Jamaica we'll die.